A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 303. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about Supercar. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. And Supercar is a Gerry Anderson super marionation show from 1961 and 1962 for a total of 39 episodes of about 25 minutes each. And it was in black and white. And we're making our sort of yearly sort of venture into the world of Anderson.
That's right. And this time we're going back to the early days of super marionation. It's considered the second Super Marionation series, and the first one that was science fiction. So we're getting into quite early versions of some of the familiar elements from Gerry Anderson's science fiction shows, and also science fiction from the 1960s. And of course, we have an amazing vehicle as a central part of this show, as you often had in the Gerry Anderson Super Marionation shows.
Yes, a fantastic vehicle, a fantastic crew, and we'll be hearing all about them.
Yes, and this is one of the earliest shows that we've covered in quite some time now. So that's nice to be back in the very early 1960s.
Yep, so here we are with Supercar, which is, as the theme song describes it, the marvel of the age. A vehicle that can travel at extraordinary speeds, hovers on a cushion of air, takes off vertically to fly, can journey underwater and even into outer space. It is a sort of typical Anderson vehicle, and it's quite wonderful. And of course, it's created by a couple of eccentric scientists and has the typical sort of heroic leading man test pilot to fly it.
And Supercar carries out rescues, it helps with experiments of different types, and it enables its crew to travel around the world for all sorts of amazing adventures in sort of science fiction style things, and sometimes spy style things as well. And they resist the attempts by international spies to steal some of the secrets of Supercar.
Yes, so you'll recognize a familiar blend of stuff that crops up in a lot of Anderson shows, particularly the ones from the 60s that we've talked about many a time.
It has something of a proto Thunderbirds feel to it, doesn't it?
It does indeed, yes. So the characters of the crew of Supercar, we have the dashing test pilot Mike Mercury, and let's pause just to reflect on another great name from the Anderson crew up there with Steve Zodiac from Fireball XL5. So Mike Mercury is the leading man, voiced by the actor Graydon Gould, and he pilots Supercar.
That's right, and we have some people surrounding him as well. Professor Rudolf Popkus, played by George Mercel originally, and later by Cyril Shapps. And he is a cheerful, white-haired co-inventor of Supercar with sort of a classic children's series, you know, silly foreign-sounding voice, and within the later episodes, Cyril Shapps playing him. We have a recognizable actor who we know from Doctor Who and from a number of occasions, and we've come across him from The Invisible Man in the 1980s, and also later on from Dark Season. So it's nice to hear him showing up so early on.
Yes, great stuff. And of course, we don't have just one eccentric scientist. We have two, because we've also got Dr. Horatio Beaker, voiced by Anderson regular David Graham. Dr. Beaker is another eccentric scientist character, another sort of slightly hard-to-place European accent, I think, Brian, and the co-inventor of Supercar. But he's also multi-talented, as most of the characters are, and that he can turn his hands to other remarkable inventions and musical instruments and even baking and so on, I think.
Yes, that's right. We certainly get those two scientists turning to all sorts of odd things. David Graham, another well-known actor, especially as a voice actor for the Gerry Anderson shows, doing both Parker and Brains in Thunderbirds. He was also one of the original voices of the Daleks, along with Peter Hawkins.
A remarkable vocal talent. Beloved as Parker and Brains, but also, as you say, crops up in many other areas as well. And in fact, we'll be coming across him again in a moment.
Yes. Jimmy Gibson is a young boy who was rescued from a crashed plane in episode one and then joins the team and is there basically all the time at the base and comes in for, the cute kid character that we would have in early 60s shows very often and is used for some humor and is voiced by Sylvia Anderson.
Yes, Sylvia Anderson doing a young boy's voice here. And as you say, Brian, he's almost the viewer's way into the show because he's our sort of personification of the young child who gets caught up in these wonderful adventures of Supercar and the crew. And of course, he's not alone because he brings with him his pet monkey, Mitch the monkey. And here we have David Graham doing a variety of noises and vocal performances as Mitch the monkey. He is, the monkey obviously is good for humorous antics, for occasionally messing up experiments, occasionally proving to be useful in some difficult situations. And this idea, I guess, early on in the Anderson worlds that they would have these creatures in the show. We remember, is it Zuni the Lazoon from Fable X-Files?
Who was also voiced by David Graham.
So there you go. So Mitch the Monkey, a prototype for the sort of creature feature in the show.
Yes, and Jimmy and Mitch, the child and the monkey, are very much characters you would expect to see from early 1960s children's TV. It very much has that kind of feel from that era.
Yes, and as we talk about in our next episode, when we discuss some of the stories, children and their monkeys from that period of time could get into all sorts of scrapes, blunder into spaceships and all sorts of things, apparently without anybody noticing, and then need rescuing.
Oh yes, absolutely.
So we've mentioned the remarkable supercar, the vehicle at the center of this show, which can, as I say, take off and land vertically. So it will go up and out through its hangar roof from their base in Black Rock, Nevada. So as ever, Anderson sort of keeping his eye on the American market by making this a sort of American themed show. And I guess that would go along with American space programs and test pilots, people like Chuck Yeager that were in the popular consciousness at the time, I guess, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. It certainly has some of that feel. Supercar also has this clear view system, which is shown as like a television screen inside the vehicle that can see through smoke or fog or underwater. It can work around all of these sorts of poor visibility obstacles and show what's really there behind things, which comes in useful all sorts of times, of course.
Absolutely, yes.
And in the various episodes, we get some of the familiar Anderson themes with amazing rescues and nods to pop culture of the time and some more comical adventures and espionage-related things. And it really introduces some of these familiar ideas for the first time.
Yes, and again, we'll talk about this a bit more next time, but it does have some of those very 60s science fiction, sci-fi, and in fact spy-fi tropes that, you know, we've talked about a few times, and we'll touch on them briefly in our next episode. And you've mentioned sort of espionage, because we haven't mentioned as yet the bad guys, the character Master Spy and his henchman Zarin, who crop up in several episodes as sort of recurring villains. As the name suggests, you know, the leader of a sort of international espionage ring who's always trying to steal the secrets of Supercar, or maybe even get hold of the vehicle itself, or otherwise interfere with their escapades. And, you know, we mentioned Prototype a few times, Brian. It's sort of prototypical The Hood from Thunderbirds in a way.
Yes, very much so. And again, we have some odd foreign sounding accents in play.
Yes, because all the spies came from Eastern Europe at that time, it seemed.
Yes, for sure. So let's get into our production notes.
Absolutely. And we've talked about Gerry Anderson's remarkable work as a producer for TV and film many times on this podcast, Brian, and his remarkable ability, I think, to get the best possible people working with him to make these wonderful shows. We've mentioned a few times his Western show, Four Feather Falls, which was the first to use his new puppet technologies in 1960. Now, obviously, it's a Western show, so it doesn't quite fit our remit. But of course, it does sort of lead on to what we're talking about.
Absolutely. Granada TV had produced Four Feather Falls and decided not to renew it for a second year. And at that point, Anderson approached Lou Grade at ATV with his idea for a science fiction show. And Anderson came up with this idea of a futuristic vehicle, and this was partly to reduce how much you needed to see the puppets walking, which was always something that was a struggle and that particularly bothered Gerry Anderson, that you couldn't get them to walk well.
Yes, always trouble for the puppeteers and the producers of the show. And in passing, let's just mention, you know, the relationship between Gerry Anderson and Lou Grade. Lou Grade, who sort of dominates ITV in the 1960s and 70s, and who clearly recognized in Anderson someone who was capable of producing these shows which would sell around the world and be a big hit wherever they were shown. So I'm not surprisingly, perhaps, when he brings him a science fiction show about a remarkable supercar, Lou Grade says, yes, go ahead, start making episodes.
Yes, of the various companies producing for ITV, ATV was doing some particularly big stuff and keeping, you know, the American market in mind and so on. So it turned out to be a very good match for Gerry Anderson and for his projects.
And if you're not familiar with Gerry Anderson, you might not have realized this yet, but we are talking about puppets. So these were the 1/3 size or thereabouts. They're about 18 inches to 2 foot tall, I think, the puppets, which were operated from a gantry high above the studio floor, controlled by fine tungsten wires. And in this case, this is the oversized heads version of Gerry Anderson, because the heads needed to be big enough to contain the solenoid devices that operated the mouths so they could lip sync with the dialogue, which was then recorded by the actors.
And I think at that point, in the 50s and into the 60s, the style for puppetry was to use large heads. And, you know, often this was so they could be seen from a distance in, you know, puppet show, you know, live puppet shows for kids and that type of thing. So it was also partly that the puppet builders, this is how they wanted to build things.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, they've also got remarkable model work. So we have Supercar itself and a variety of models ranging from something that was 9 inches long to a 5 foot model, which presumably was needed for the actual puppets to climb into. Goodness knows what happened to that model over the years. Hopefully it's in a collection somewhere, Brian.
Yes, indeed. Many of Gerry Anderson's regular collaborators were already working on this series and would continue to work with them for many years. In particular, Christine Glanville and Mary Turner were the puppeteers, and I believe may have been involved in constructing the puppets as well. Mary Turner certainly had a lot of involvement with that for many years. So it's definitely nice to see their signature style starting to come in at this point.
Absolutely. And this is where, as we say, we get these famous names starting to appear as part of the Anderson team, presumably from Four Feathers Falls onwards. But here on Supercar, so we get Reg Hill, who was a longtime co-producer with Anderson, but also wrote episodes. And then we've got other episodes written by Jerry Anderson himself, by the Woodhouse brothers, that's Hugh and Martin Woodhouse. And the names sort of keep on coming, don't they, Brian?
Yes, and one that I definitely look for and was there is Derek Meddings, who worked on special effects and model work for this series and continued to work with Jerry Anderson for many years into some of his live action work at the very beginning of the 70s and would go on to work on the James Bond films and that sort of thing.
Yes, I mean, you know, what an input from a fabulous creator, Derek Meddings, for, you know, supervising special effects and model work. And as we always say when you talk about Anderson, doing great explosions and so on.
Yes, he, you know, mastered some of the work with the vehicles and explosions and things and really had some impressive stuff. Sylvia Anderson designed costumes and wrote episodes and voiced Jimmy as well. So she was already quite heavily involved. She wasn't producing yet on this one, although she would go on to do that.
And in fact, this was the show where Jerry and Sylvia Anderson got married. And during the production of the show, and it's a remarkable story, they went off to get married in the morning and they come back in the afternoon to help continue to film the title sequence for Supercar. So nothing really sort of gets in the way of the Anderson productions, Brian. You only get the morning off to get married.
Yeah, it sounds like something the Andersons would do, to be right back in there just after getting married.
And of course, they've also got to gather their actors around them to do the dialogue. And we have, you know, regular voice actor, National Treasure. We've mentioned him a few times. David Graham doing a number of voices on this show. Dr. Beaker, Mitch the Monkey. But he also does, I think he does one of the spies and several other characters.
Yes, and he's the type of actor who would fill in on lots of things like that. We have a Canadian actor working in Britain at the time, Graydon Gould, who plays Mike Mercury, playing an American character and doing sort of kid series character voice rather than a more realistic voice, but definitely a memorable sound for Mike Mercury.
Yes, and all these Canadian actors who were over here in the 60s and 70s, Brian, filling in as Americans in British productions.
Certainly happened with a few of them, yeah.
Yeah.
And all of this was shot on studio in Slough, the industrial estate there where most of the 1960s Super Marionation work was being done. And they built up their facilities and their expertise to do all of these things over time.
Yes, that famous studio, which I think is now a tire garage, I believe, because it crops up in some of the documentaries when you see people going back to revisit where the studio was on this industrial estate.
Yeah, up until recently, the building was still standing. I don't think it is now. I think it was replaced by something else. But yeah, it was, the building was around for a long time.
And of course, the actors were traveling out because they would do the dialogue recording on a Sunday. And I know Graydon Gould commented at the time that it was quite difficult to get to Slough on a Sunday with public transport in the early 60s running markedly reduced services on a Sunday, as used to happen. But there you go. Those were the sort of some of the stresses of a jobbing actor at that time, I guess, Brian. And of course, Graydon Gould did say that he was getting paid well to do this. So, you know, he needed the work, I guess.
Yes.
And of course, as well as the vocals and in the dialogue, we've also got the other element of sound, which is the music for the show. And Barry Gray, there's another famous name, longtime Anderson collaborator, of course, wrote the theme song, performed by Mike Sams solo for the first series of 26 episodes. But then I think it was re-recorded by the Mike Sams Singers, his vocal group, for the second season of 13 episodes. So we get two different versions of the theme song, depending on which episode you're watching.
Yes, and it's interesting because it gives you quite a different style with the same basic tune, but a much sort of more energetic version with lots of harmony that was used later on. Series 1 ran for 26 episodes and was broadcast from January through August of 1961. And they came back with Series 2, which was another 13 episodes. That was in 1962. And that was when the filmed in Super Mario Nation title card was first introduced.
So here we are. This is the first show that was actually sort of labeled as Super Mario Nation. Obviously, they developed the techniques on Four Feather Falls, but this is the first show that actually gets called Super Mario Nation, or the phrase is used for the first time, I guess, Brian.
I think that's right, yeah. And of course, the big change with the introduction of Super Mario Nation, the big development, was the solenoid for controlling the mouth. So the mouth could be remote controlled to open and close in correct timing with the voice. And compared to earlier puppetry, and especially earlier marionette puppetry, this was a big deal.
Yes, it was. And, you know, produced remarkable effects. I guess, in a way, puppetry was the animation of the time for television, at least, where it perhaps wasn't quite so cheap to produce animation for television for kids shows, but puppetry, they could do it. And of course, the Anderson team, remarkable pioneers, and making several breakthroughs in order to develop the technology.
Yes, absolutely. And there certainly was animation for television being done in that era, but you get all of this puppetry as well, and the Andersons were certainly a big part of that.
And of course, you won't be surprised to hear that the show was indeed sold successfully around the world, broadcast in many different regions. And of course, it was also, dare we say it, Brian, it was merchandised as well. So we'll talk a little bit about some of the toys and other bits and pieces next time.
Oh, absolutely. So we should get into availability.
Yes. So here in Region 2, as with all the Anderson shows that we've covered, it is easy to get hold of. The complete series box set is currently about £22 on Amazon. It has obviously all 39 episodes, plus the feature-length documentary, which is called Full Boost Vertical. And there's also two episode commentaries by Gerry Anderson himself. And then, as usual, on these discs, you'll find tucked away some PDFs, some photo galleries, some storybooks and Christmas annuals and so on, Brian. So lots of extra bits and pieces here on the box set. And as I say, about £22 currently.
Very nice. In Region 1, there is a release. There's a box set available for about $21 US or $35 Canadian on the Amazon site. And Amazon Prime Video has it available in the US as well. And I don't know exactly what extras are available on the DVDs, but there certainly are some. The first episode, I think it was, has a commentary by Sylvia Anderson. So there are commentaries, and I believe some other extras as well.
And interesting that they've got some streaming in the US on Amazon. So we don't normally get that, I think, with the Anderson shows. They're usually just on DVD, but obviously streaming is the way of the shape of things to come.
Yes, and I believe some of them are on iTunes, but I don't think this one is.
Right. So next time, we will talk a little bit more about some of our favourite episodes, give you a flavour of some of their exploits. Plus, we'll talk about those spin-offs and merchandising opportunities and compare this with Anderson's other super marination science fiction shows that we've talked about in the past.
Absolutely. We will also share some of our own thoughts on the series and give you our recommendations. So I think there will be plenty for us to talk about next time. So until then, you can find all of our past episodes, including all of our Gerry Anderson discussions, at BritishInvaders.com. Or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there and join in on the discussions. I'm sure we'll be talking about the Gerry Anderson Super Marionation shows very soon.
Excellent. And also find us as part of the Voice of Geeks Network, that's internet streaming radio, at vognetwork.com. British Invaders goes out Mondays and Tuesdays, but you'll find a host of other sci-fi and geek-related shows there.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, it's Eamon in England also signing off.